The Clash of the Two Americas, Volume 1, The Unfinished Symphony, was written by Matthew Arrett and Cynthia Chung, and published by the Canadian Patriot Press. This recording is narrated by Hugh Patrick Trudeau. Chapter 11, The Real Story Behind the Alaska Purchase. The sale of Alaska stands out as an incomprehensible historical anomaly for the many who choose to see history merely as a sequence of linear events determined by practical decision-making. The failure to recognize higher organizing principles shaping humanity's collective experience as a universal process has prevented many historians from recognizing the true dynamic from which such a decision sprung, and which could only be recognized from a top-down perspective. Just as 19th century America suffered from an internal struggle between factions who interpreted the Constitution in diametrically opposing ways, so too did the Russian state feature a similar battle between forces who saw Russia's destiny likened to a Third Roman Empire, in opposition to forces who saw Russia's destiny as a sovereign nation-state meant to exemplify the highest moral and intellectual powers that human society can attain to. These figures, several of whom will shortly be introduced, represented the best traditions set into motion by the Leibnizian reforms of Peter the Great, the Tsar of Russia from 1682 to 1725. As Russian expansionism was promoted by opportunistic forces dominating the government of Tsar Nicholas I, the Tsar from 1825 to 1855, who chased after Ottoman possessions in their obsession to expand Russian influence in Central Asia, the seeds of Russia's self-destruction were being sown. While Russian expansionists were expecting the easy capture of territories long held by a failing Ottoman Empire, what they found was a web of Anglo-French intrigue and traps that nearly destroyed the proud nation during the bloody Crimean War between October 1853 and February 1856. The war's outcome saw Russia humiliated, indebted, and crippled morally and physically. In response to this failure, a new breed of statecraft arose as an enlightened Tsar, Alexander II, took the reins from the deceased Nicholas in 1854. With his leadership, statesmen such as the Grand Duke Constantine, Alexander's brother, General Nikolai Muraviev, Foreign Minister Gorchakov, and the great Russian ambassador to America, Edouard de Steckel, gained a new level of influence, and a new foreign policy doctrine was created. This doctrine was exemplified by an enhanced appreciation of the destructive role of the British Empire's global strategy and the importance of America as a collaborator and partner. Alexander II quickly began tackling endemic corruption and worked to transform Russia, first by freeing the serfs in 1861, earning him thereby the title of the Great Liberator. Although America had fallen into a civil war by 1861, the British Empire, which had done so much to keep the world subdued during the Crimean War, the Opium Wars, and the suppression of vast Indian uprisings, was petrified that a Russian-American friendship would set into motion a great power alliance capable of undoing Britain's global hegemony. One of the few means Britain had to keep these two potential allies from uniting were its territories of Canada, and especially the colony of British Columbia. At that time, this colony was an isolated and bankrupt outpost on the west coast, separated by 3,000 kilometers of undeveloped wilderness from eastern Canada, privately owned by the Hudson's Bay Company. British Columbia's primary economic connection was not to Britain, but rather to California, and a large movement of colonists had been calling for separation from the empire in order to join the then prosperous USA. In 1860, Russian Ambassador Stockel wrote to the Tsar, "If the United States should win mastery of our possessions, then British Oregon, that is, British Columbia, would be squeezed together by the Americans from the north and south and would hardly be able to escape." Grand Duke Constantine echoed Stockel, saying, "The United States of North America should, in the course of events, be eager to conquer all of North America, and will therefore meet us sooner or later, and there is not the slightest doubt that it will seize our colonies without great effort, and we shall be in no position to retain them." As early as 1853, General Mikhail Muraviev had already promoted Russia's sale of Alaska in a letter to the Tsar, stating, "Due to the present amazing development of railroads, the United States will soon spread over all North America. We must face the fact that we will have to cede our North American possessions to them." The Civil War and Russia. By 1862, the Civil War was being fought in full force, and, with British corporations and the Foreign Office supporting the Confederacy, and banks waging financial warfare against the Union, the tide had quickly turned against Lincoln. As the world watched with bated breath, Ambassador Stockel wrote to Gorchakov, "The disintegration of the United States as a nation would, from our point of view, be something to be deplored. The American Confederation has acted as a counterpoise to British power, and in this sense, its continued existence constitutes an important element in the balance of power." He continued that he desired the preservation of the American Union as an indivisible nation. Surely, the outcome of the Civil War would have been much darker had it not been for Alexander II's deployment of the Russian Navy to the Pacific and Atlantic coasts of America in 1863. Which kept British and French forces from assisting the Confederacy in open warfare against Lincoln. By December 26, 1864, as the outcome of the war in favor of the Union was blossoming, Secretary of State William Seward encouraged the Grand Duke Constantine to come to America with the following words, "I think it would be beneficial to us, and by no means unprofitable to Russia. I forbear from specifying my reasons. They will readily occur to you, as they would to His Imperial Highness, if his thoughts were turned in that direction." The sale of Alaska consummated. In 1866, Ambassador Stockel was called back to Russia, and after a lengthy meeting with Tsar Alexander II, the Grand Duke Constantine, the Foreign Minister, and the Finance Minister, was given approval to initiate the sale of Alaska to America. On the evening of March 29, 1867, Ambassador Stockel delivered the news to William Seward at his private residence in Washington, D.C. When asked if Seward wished to convene a meeting the following day, the Secretary of State asked, "Why put off until tomorrow what could be done that very evening?" At midnight, the office of the State Department was opened for a select group made up of Senator Charles Sumner, Secretary Seward, and a few trusted members from the Russian consulate alongside Stockel. As the sun rose on March 30th, the treaty was written, finalizing the sale for $7.2 million, and before the ink was dry, it was presented to a shocked Congress who passed it in the following weeks. Seward himself described the treaty as the most important diplomatic maneuver of his life, saying, "This treaty stands alone in the history of diplomacy as an important treaty conceived, initiated, and prosecuted and completed without being preceded or attended by protocols or dispatches." Events move fast in the post-Civil War years. In order to prevent pro-American forces in Canada from declaring independence from a weakened empire, the 1867 British North America Act was signed, establishing a northern monarchy on deep state principles for the next 160 years. The British hand behind the Civil War was exposed for all the world to see in the Alabama Claims of 1872, the world's first international trial, finding the British government guilty of militarily supporting the Confederacy. In recompense for this crime, Sumner and Seward wanted the British to cede all of their remaining possessions in North America. Such an act would certainly have given great fuel to the connection of the recently completed transcontinental railway with Eurasia. Desperate to keep its independently mined colony from joining America, the British Foreign Office offered a bribe to its Pacific colony. A desperate Briton purchased the private Hudson Bay lands in 1870, canceled the colony's debts, and promised to build a railroad from Ontario to the Pacific, which was finally completed in 1885. Russia had by this time positioned itself to begin construction of its own transcontinental railroad with the help of American engineers. It was finally completed in 1905 under the leadership of American system follower Count Sergei Witte. On its maiden voyage, the Trans-Siberian Railroad saw Philadelphia-made train cars run across the Russian heartland. It is no accident that all of the key players involved in the Alaska Purchase were also involved in the Russian Continental Rail program on both sides of the ocean. The China Connection. Both Charles Sumner and William Seward were strong advocates of uniting America's destiny with China. Seward and the U.S. Consul in Beijing, General Anson Burlingame, worked in tandem with Seward's son George Frederick Seward, U.S. Consul in Shanghai, to organize the Seward-Burlingame Treaty of 1868 with China, giving China free emigration and travel in America, reciprocal access to education for citizens living in the other's country, and favored nation status with the United States on trade. While treacherous politicians later annulled this treaty, its existence brought a new generation of Chinese revolutionaries to America, including a young student named Sun Yat-sen, who would later lead a revolution in 1911, establishing a new Chinese republic upon the three principles elaborated first by Abraham Lincoln: government for, by, and of the people. Senator Sumner expressed his understanding of America's connection with China and the Transcontinental Railroad during his 1867 speech in defense of the Alaska Purchase. "To unite the East of Asia with the West of America is the aspiration of commerce now as when the English navigator Mears recorded his voyage. Of course, whatever helps this result is an advantage. The Pacific Railroad is such an advantage, for though running westward, it will be, when completed, a new highway to the East." When President Ulysses Grant came to power in 1869, he gave much support to this internationalization of the American system, while also fighting valiantly to advance Lincoln's plans for reconstruction and reconciliation with an emancipated America. Gilpin's World Land Bridge. Lincoln's former bodyguard and the first governor of Colorado, William Gilpin, was not least among this group. Gilpin had been known as one of the earliest champions of America's transcontinental railroad from as early as 1846, and his hundreds of speeches, published maps, and writings went further than any other statesman to demonstrate what those international public works would look like. Describing his grand design for international public works, Gilpin wrote in his widely read 1890 magnum opus, The Cosmopolitan Railway, "Railways continue to extend themselves and soon to become a universal system over all the lands of the globe. We have seen the energies of the American people bringing into line and into use these new powers span their continent with the Pacific railways. They will continue to expand their work to Bering Straits, where all the continents are united. This will extend itself along similarly propitious thermal selvage of the Oriental Russian coasts into China. To prolong this unbroken line of cosmopolitan railways along the latitudinal plateau of Asia to Moscow and to London will not have long delay. The less significant and isolated continents of the Southern Hemisphere, South America, Africa, and Australasia, will be reached by feeders through Panama, Suez, and the chain of Oriental peninsulas and islands. The whole area and all the populations of the globe will thus be united and fused by land travel and railway. Gilpin reiterated his view that it was only by embracing its Promethean heritage and fully committing to the development of Alaska that America could avoid falling back under British manipulation. As applicable then as it is to today's emerging four-power alliance and the expanding Belt and Road Initiative, Gilpin knew that national institutions must stay in the driver's seat when he said, 24 years have already elapsed since we first assumed the responsibility of ownership. And since then, what have we done? What improvement have we made upon the condition of life, the stolid animal existence of the half-civilized Russians and Aleuts? None whatsoever. Place Alaska on the line of a world-encircling railway. Give her a special code of laws befitting her requirements and men of enterprise and capital to develop her resources, and she would pay for the road 5 times over. There is every reason to believe that Russia would hail the opening of her great eastern interior with joy. She would have everything to gain by it and nothing to lose. Since the time of Peter the Great, the ambition of Russian rulers has been not only to extend their possessions, but to improve the conditions of those who inhabit them. In his 1890 book, Gilpin again continuously emphasized his long-held belief that the inevitable awakening of China would be the basis for renewal and salvation of the West. In Asia, a civilization resting on a basis of remote antiquity has had indeed a long pause, but a certain civilization, although hitherto hermetically sealed up from European influence, has continued to exist. The ancient Asiatic colossus, in a certain sense, needed only to be awakened to new life, and European culture finds a basis there on which it can build future reforms. By 1906, Tsar Nicholas II of Russia supported the plan for the American-Russian Bering Strait Tunnel, officially approving a team of American engineers to conduct a feasibility study. A New York Times article reported on March 27, 1906, "The Tsar of Russia has issued an order authorizing the American syndicate, represented by Baron Loic de Lebel, to begin work on the Trans-Siberian Alaska Railroad project. The plan is to build a railroad from Siberia to Alaska by bridging and tunneling the Bering Strait. It is said that the enterprise will be capitalized at from $250 to $300 million, and the money centers of Russia, France, and the United States will be asked to take bonds." While the Anglo-American-financed revolution deposed the Tsar and his family by 1917, the Russian government, under the guidance of Vladimir Putin, working in tandem with Xi Jinping's China, have put the project back onto the agenda. The vision of Gilpin's new paradigm is being given a new chance at life.